They are the 3rd of January 2020, Friday. So we are up to Musar Day for Perek Tes. A couple of interesting points to make here in Perek Tes. Number one, the Perek begins by saying, Shema Yisrael, Atah Over Yom HaSer Yardin. Today you're going to cross the Yardin, you're going to go and conquer the Gaim, Gedolim Atzum, Mecha, Arim, Gedolos, right? They are all so great and powerful, etc. So there is a Medrash here. The Medrash comments. This is on the spot in Ekev. Shema Yisrael Atah Over Yom HaSer Yardin. Today you're crossing the Yardin. Halacha. It just states, here's a halacha, by the way. Adam me Yisrael sheshosamayim litzamo, that a Jewish person who drinks water in order to quench their thirst, Omer, Baruch shehakol niyeh bidvaro. They say the bracha of shehakol niyeh bidvaro. Now there is a bit of a question here, of just a side halacha question of if you drink water only to quench your thirst. I mean, you're not actually enjoying it, but it's like you're desperate for the water, whether it applies, but okay, not for now. Next, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Bori Nefashos Rabos V'Chesronot. That you say the bracha, this bracha, Bori Nefashos, afterwards. So, what is that? What's going on here? Why, the Gemara actually says that Rabbi Tarfon held that was the bracha beforehand. I mean, they're having a machlokas, is what do you say first? Shakol Niebid Varo, or Bori Nefashos Rabos V'Chesronot? Okay, that's an interesting machlokas. But what in the world does it have to do with this? Right here, the parsha is telling us, today you're going to cross the Yardin, and the Medrash jumps in by saying, by the way, if you're interested in a halacha, the halacha is that when you drink water, you have to make a bracha beforehand. A little bit of machlokas as to what bracha you make beforehand, but you got to make a bracha beforehand. And then the Medrash goes on to say, by the way, it's interesting to note that a lot of the miracles that have happened with the Jewish people all had to do with water. That in Mitzrayim they turned a lot of the miracles came out of the Nile. And Rabbi Yitzchak says that when they went to drink during the Makkah of Dam, and they would both drink from the same river, so for the Jew it would come up water, for the Mitzri it would come up blood. And when they left, also, the miracles were done via water, and that the Yam Suf split for them. But like, okay, what is that? That's an interesting ha'ara, but what does that have to do with right now? So the Chassam Sofer says, the Chassam Sofer makes a different point on this pasuk. They might be alluding to this, that why is it that Hashem comes and says, you know, you're going to cross your Jordan, you're going to enter into the land of Israel, the people there are all very big and very powerful, and the cities are all built up and all fortified, and don't worry, you're going to take them on. Chassam Sofer says, like, why was that necessary? Why did Hashem do that? Why did Bnei Yisrael have been out of there for a couple hundred years? So instead of Bnei Yisrael being settled by big, strong, powerful, mighty people that build strong, fortified, powerful cities, why don't you just, like, put in a bunch of, like, losers? Like, a bunch of Nebuchs could go and conquer the land. And then the whole thing would be a lot easier. Why would Hashem just make it so that a bunch of lesser nations would go in there and they would conquer the land? So he says to answer that question, we go to this idea of Bori Nefashos Rabos, that the Medrash actually adds, how do we refer to that bracha? Right, after drinking a cup of water, what bracha chrona do we make? Bori Nefashos. Right, that's how everybody says it. The Medrash, however, says, Bori Nefashos Rabos V'Chesronan, that Hashem created numerous things, and He created their V'Chesronan, their deficiencies. That bracha is the bracha that we make, and we recognize the fact that we were created with deficiencies. What's the deficiency that we're recognizing when it comes to the bracha on water? So perhaps the Chacham Sofer says a deficiency that you need to drink, right? Wouldn't it be easier if Hashem made us that we wouldn't need to drink? I remember one time when I was in Rabbi in Phoenix, so we had Pesach Kron came and visited us, and we had we went out for pizza. We had a pregame show for lunch, and I remember him just making this comment, if only I didn't have to sleep. How much more would I be able to get done? I'd be able to write much more. I'd be able to do a lot more things. So I remember just being struck by that. If only I didn't have to sleep. If only I didn't have to eat. If only I didn't have to drink. If only I didn't have to do all these things. But yet we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for creating us v'chesronan, with all of the things that we are lacking. Why does that? What does that come? What's the point of the? Why do we thank Hashem for the chesronan? Because all of the things that we're lacking, the challenges that we have in life, allow us the opportunity to overcome and allow us the opportunity to grow. So, therefore, we thank Hashem. You created us with our deficiencies, but yet through those deficiencies, we recognize the fact that you take care of us. Right, the fact that we have water, the fact that we have the things that we have to eat and the things that we need to drink, that sums over then adds in. And so to Bnei Israel here, by recognizing that there was going to be a challenge in order to conquer the land of Israel, so and the greater the challenge, the greater we recognize the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we thank Hashem, Barei Nefashos Rabos, that you created many numerous things and their deficiencies, which allow us to recognize the wonderful things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us and allows us to develop that connection with Hashem. Okay, so that's idea number one. Idea number two, there's an interesting note here from in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav. Nefesh HaRav was put together by my Rebbe Rav Shechter, about his recollections from the Rav, from his Rebbe Rav Salavitchik. So much of it is Hanhagos, especially in the early editions. In the first Nefesh Rav, there's really three that have come out about him just recording things about his Rebbe. So towards the end, there's a section on Parsha. So in Parsha's Ekev, he has a pasuk from this Aliyah, from this parak that we've been learning, where in parak test it says, Balusi Ahara. Lakachas luchos avanim luchos habris ashekras shem mechem va'ishev bahar arba'im yom va'arba'im laila lechel lochalti mayim lo shasisi. I sat on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. I didn't eat bread and I didn't drink water. Okay, so far so good. Okay, if we go, that was in chapter 9, verse 9. If we go to chapter 10, verse 10, right? Take a look. Chapter 10, verse 10. What does it say? Avanochi amarti bahar. I stood on the mountain for 40 days. 40 days. And I listened to Hashem this time as well. And Hashem, you know, and Hashem doesn't want to destroy you, right? So what's the difference between them? There's one thing that seems to be contradictory between those two sections, and that is not about the eating and the drinking. That's only mentioned in the first one, but in our chapter, in chapter 9, verse 9, it says, I shave bahar arba'im yom va'arba'im layla. I sat on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And what does it say in verse Yud in chapter 10? Right? Amadati bahar kaimim rishin. I stood on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. So which one is it? So was he standing on the mountain or was he sitting on the mountain? So this is not Rav Salavitchik's question. This is a Gemara. This is a question that the Gemara itself asks. The Gemara in Maseches Megillah daf Chaf Aleph Hamad Aleph asks this question. Points out the idea that why does one stand for Kavodah Torah? So why does one stand when learning Torah? Or in order to demonstrate Kavodah Torah, so we stand for Kavodah Torah. Nobody here is standing right now, including me. Why is that? So the Gemara makes a comment that, I forget which of the, do I have it here? Yeah, that from the days of Moshe until Rabbi Gamliel, lo hayu lamdim Torah elam u'umah. They would only learn Torah by standing. And it says, the Gemara comments, Mishameis Rabbi Gamliel, Yarad Choli Leon, when Rabbi Gamliel passed away, Choli, illness came into the world, or weakness came into the world, Bahayu Lamdim Torah Miyusham. And they started learning Torah sitting down. Sitting down, and that's why the Gemara comments, there's a Gemara in the end of Maseches Sota where it talks about different characteristics leaving the world upon the death of various Tanoim and Amoraim. And the Gemara there comments, Mishameis Rabbi Gamliel, Batal Kavod Hatayra. That Kavod HaTorah left the world because no longer could people stand when learning Torah. So the Gemara there. Okay, so which one is it? Meaning, so Moshe went up to Har Sinai and it says that I sat and I learned for 40 days and 40 nights. Hey, wait a second, Moshe Rabbeinu, right? I thought of the Giborim. You're of the strong ones. So why are you doing sitting when learning Torah? Not only are you sitting when learning Torah, you're sitting when learning Torah from God, right? God is there teaching you Torah, and you are, you know, sitting back and enjoying yourself. But don't think he's eating and drinking. He's not eating and drinking, right? Which raises the question even more. If you're not going to eat, you're not going to drink, so why are you sitting, right? Go to do the full Kavodah Torah thing. So what's going on here? So the Rav quotes from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. When did Rav Chaim Volozhiner live? Anyone guess? Did he live before Rashi? No. Yeah. Chaim Volozhiner was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, the primary Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. He lived into then the 19th century. The author of the Nefesh HaChaim, he was also the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, which is considered the father of the modern-day yeshiva system. So that dates itself back to the early 1800s to Rav Chaim Volozhin. He also wrote a sefer called Nefesh HaChaim, which is sort of the sort of a competitor. It was written at the same time as the Tanya, right? And it's credited with putting the Hasidic movement and the Litvish movement sort of back on the same course together, because he wrote the Nefesh HaChaim, which was supposed to be a presentation of Torah Hashkafa, Torah philosophy, and the Tanya is also a presentation of Torah philosophy from a Hasidic perspective, and people look through it and realize that they're pretty much writing the same thing. So there are a couple of distinctions, but they're pretty much on the same course. So in a way, that's credited with keeping everybody together as one unified country, one unified nation. So anyways, so the Nefesh HaChaim points this out. And the last of this issue of was Moshe standing or was Moshe sitting? So the Gemara itself raises that question. The Gemara has several answers. The last one that the Gemara gives is by Rava, where he says, Rachus mu'umad v'kashus mi'yushav. That the easy part of learning, Torah sometimes is easy to grasp, sometimes it's hard to grasp. So when it was easier to grasp, he would stand. And when it was hard to grasp, so then he would sit. So Rav Chaim Volozhin commented, aha, so you see that sometimes in learning that standing up is going to lead to one's exertion, and it might weaken a person a little bit, and therefore he's not going to be able to exert all of his strength in order to understand the Torah, v'nimsa shelimudo lakoy. And he realized that his learning is going to be a little weaker. So therefore, it makes sense to sit for even during the time when everybody would stand in order to learn Torah. It makes sense to sit for the difficult part so that you can give your full power and full concentration to learning. So he made the following comment. Then he says, "What does that tell us then? That when you have a contradiction between kavod haTorah and limud haTorah." Right, we think, what do you mean? Learning Torah is the best way to honor the Torah. He says, no. This is in a way a contradiction between honoring the Torah and learning the Torah. What's the greatest honor for the Torah? The greatest honor for the Torah is standing for it. Right? What is the best way of learning Torah? Sitting for it. So what's the psak coming out of the Gemara? The psak of the coming of the Gemara is that you try to do your best to stand, but not at the expense of learning, of being able to learn Torah, of being able to learn Torah to the best way. So, b'chol kai gav, the mitzvah Talmud Torah docha l'mitzvah kavod haTorah. That the mitzvah of learning Torah beats out the mitzvah of kavod haTorah, and that's how we understand this contradiction. That's how we understand what Rava meant. That when Moshe was at our Sinai, the easier parts he would stand for, the more difficult parts he would sit for. That's the suggestion of Rav Chaim Volozhin, which is an interesting idea. Conceptually, what is the goal? In fact, on the Headlines podcast several months ago already, he had this question, the goal of learning Torah. That was sort of the theme of the show, where he brought in people who are experts in the Nefesh HaChaim or the Baal Tanya in this country, you know, this issue, and he suggested that there might be a machlokas between the Hasidic world and the Litvish world in this manner. If you go to a Hasidic yeshiva, you'll see everybody, when they're learning, they're wearing their full garments, right, the long garments, and they're wearing their hats. And they're sitting and learning. As opposed to if you go to the Mir Yeshiva, go to a Litvish Yeshiva, how's everybody sitting? They're sitting with their shirt sleeves, right? They're just wearing their shirts and their pants, and their jackets and hats are someplace else, you know, reserved for davening, right? So he suggested that maybe that's a distinction in this understanding. In the Hasidic world, learning Torah is more of a religious experience, as opposed to the Litvish world, it's more about the job of learning the Torah. Right, there's a little bit of a distinction there, and he presented the story that he asked her. I don't remember what exactly, but there's a Rebbe in the Mir Yeshiva, the most popular Rebbe in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, which has, you know, something like 7,000-8,000 Talmidim. So probably like 1,000 of them consider themselves to be in the Shir of someone named Rav Asher Arieli. He's probably the most prominent Magid Shir in the Mir Yeshiva, and he told the story that somebody went and talked to him, or he went. I remember what it was. But asked him, you know, when you give shir or when you're preparing, I think when he gives shir, he said, you don't even wear a jacket when you give shir. He says, yeah, because I'm in my place of work. This is my office. Right? My office, I take off, I wear the jacket, but I take it off when I sit down to, you know, roll my sleeves up in order to get down to work. So that's an interesting perspective that maybe is reflective in this tradition from Rav Chaim Volozhin. Okay, one or two more things going on here. And that is later on in the parak, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, not much later on, but a little bit later on, it says, Vayomar Hashem Elai Le'mor, Ra'isi Samazah, V'nei Am K'shei Orefu. That Hashem says, I've seen these people, and they are Am K'shei Oref. What is an Am K'shei Oref? Stiff-necked people, or technically stiff back of the neck. That's technically what an orif is, the back of the neck, like an egla arufa, the egla that was damaged from the back. Okay? So they're stiff-necked people. So what is the meaning of that? So we quoted a Sforno the other day. The Sforno says, that you can't be a righteous person and be an Am K'shei Oref. Why? Because the stiffness of the neck will make it difficult for a person to follow their heart. That even though he realizes that something might be wrong and that he might need to change his character, right? He might really realize that people are stubborn and they're not going to change it, and therefore that will hold people back from change. So the Mechtav Meliyahu, the Mechtav Meliyahu in Chelek Aleph, page 63, and it's sort of a quote here, but the Mechtav Meliyahu raises the suggests that's what Hashem was saying. I mean, Hashem was saying, I'm willing to work with these people. I mean, I understand I created imperfect people. That's part of what, and they need to be corrected over the course of their lives. I mean, they go back and forth, and they do good things, bad things. As long as they see the messages of where they need to correct themselves, that's considered a good thing. But if they're Am K'shei Oref, if they're people that are going to be stubborn, they're not going to take the hint, they're not going to recognize when I'm trying to speak to them, so then there's no point. That means that they're never, ever going to be able to do tshuva. So therefore, that's why it has to be that I'm going, that's why Hashem said I'm going to destroy them, because of their fact that they are an Am K'shei Oref, that they are being very stubborn, and they're stubborn by nature. I mean, that's going to be their fatal flaw. So how did we come back? What case did Moshe make? So right. So what happened? So the Hashem says to Moshe, Ra'isi es amazeh v'nei am k'shei orefu. I see this nation and they are k'shei oref. And he says, V'ata hanichu li v'yichar pi behem v'yachlam. He says, so now leave me alone. And I'm going to, shalom. And I'm going to go ahead and consume them. Right? So according to the Sforno, how do we understand them? That Hashem says they're not only did they do the bad thing by sinning at the Chet HaEgel, but they're non-correctable, right? I'm not going to be able to change them because they are being very stubborn. So, however, the opening that Moshe Rabbeinu saw, so how did Moshe change that? When Hashem says, let me go, herif mimeni v'yash midein. In the next pasuk, Hashem says, release me, and I will go and destroy them, and I'll destroy their name, and I'll make you into a great nation. So Moshe said, aha, that's my opening. Because Hashem says, I'm going to destroy them. Right? Again, what exactly? Yeah, but Hashem says, I'm going to destroy them. And he says to Moshe, let me go, plus I'm going to go do that. So Moshe says, ah. Right? Anybody caught the key word there? Where did Moshe see the opportunity?
Let me go.
Let me go. Right? Hashem says to Moshe, let me go, and I'll destroy them. Moshe says, well, guess what? I'm not letting go. Right? And rather, I'm going to daven, and I'm going to keep it. That's what it means. Shetofsu Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara tells us, Ka'odim shu tofis es chaver b'migdo. So Moshe grabbed Hashem like a person grabs another person in the garment. Shemasar atzvo l'mises lehem, that he was moser nefesh, he gave himself up for their death. Sh'amad Moshe b'tfil lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ad she'achzato eish shel atzamos, ad she'echleim. That Moshe stood in their davening until he was able to things were fiery, etc., and he was able to keep Hashem there. He's able to keep Hashem present. So instead, how did Moshe change it? What did Moshe do instead? So we have it in our parak here, right? Instead, Moshe said, "I'll break the luchos." What is breaking the luchos? Breaking the luchos is something so crazy, so big, so caused such a trauma that would cause them, that even people with stiff necks would be forced to turn around and they'd be able, and they'd be forced to take notice. So mikanchim yachzor, what do we see? That if a person wants to change what their activities, alav laharbus b'yinoz ad sheyivaka kashay oref, zuya dera shebekocha lahavi lidei shinoyimis. In order to make a real change, sometimes you have to make do something dramatic, do something big. So that's where the Michta Meliyahu ends. So in the Sefer Yalkut Lekach Tov, he says, and this idea, the idea of how difficult sometimes it is to change the Kshei Orif of a person, he tells the following story from the Sefer Pe'er Hador. What is the Pe'er Hador? Pe'er Hador is the officially the biography of the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish passed away, I think, in the 60s, 50s, 60s, I think. He in Eretz Yisrael, Bnei Brak, really the leader of the modern Haredi movement in Eretz Yisrael. There is a five-volume biography written on him called the Sefer Pe'er Hador. There's more recently done a scholarly biography, a big, fat Sefer. But the Pe'er Hador is like the traditional biography of the Chazon Ish. And it tells the following story, that after this is 8 years after the death of the Chazon Ish, the story came out that a person said that when he was 17, he left his small town in Hungary, and he went, he forgot, he says, I quickly to move someplace else. I wanted to leave his father's house. This was before World War II. And he wanted to forget the chinuch, or he forgot the chinuch that he learned in his father's house, and he, went to work, and he, gave up on Shabbos, gave up on mitzvos, all these different things, and he cut off all of the connections to his past that he has. Right, he says, Ovadati lo rak b'Shabbos. I worked not only on Shabbos. El gam b'Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippur. Even Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So the despite the fact that he thought that he was leaving everything, he was taken during the war. He survived Auschwitz, ended up in, he was taken in Auschwitz, and he was saved by a miracle. Acher kach avarti Theresienstadt, they were marched out of there, right? So he ended up there. He was ended up being freed from there. He was ended up being able to make it to Eretz Yisrael, but still he wasn't religious. He wasn't involved Shabbos, Yaltiv, nothing, right? He says one night Yom Kippur, he acted as normal, but that night his father came to him in his dream, and his father was dressed in a kittel, and he was dressed in a talus, as he was when he was alive. And he said, Chazal l'tshuva, go back and do tshuva. Chazal l'derech shechinachti otach, go back in the way that I taught you. Acheres shenosecha mukutos, after these years that you've lost. And next morning he woke up and shrugged and said, okay. Right? And he didn't change his mind. And his father came, v'chein chazar chalom, and he came back to him in a dream again. And the Shabbos night came. And it was late at night, and he says he went to the coffee house, the Ichnasu Leves Coffee Barishon Letzion, the city that he lived or that he worked, and he ate and he drank and he came back home, and he went to bed, and he right away heard Oy vavoy atashuv chote. He says Gevalt dun zindichst vetter. You're right, you're still sinning. Right, his father comes to him back in a dream, so he woke up. He says, I'll tachshuv shezeh stam chalom, and then his father came to him another night in a dream and said to him, and was dressed in his uniform that he wore in Auschwitz. That he looked at him, he had another dream where he looked at himself as if he was dressed in his uniform from Auschwitz. V'shuv omed hu lefnei, and his father came in front of him again, dressed in a kittel and a talis. And I heard him saying to me, "Al tachshuv shezeh stam chalom. Don't think this is just a dream. Bati lazhir chashet tachshuv v'tshuva. I've come to warn you that you have to go and do tshuva. V'shemayim kfar nechrat alecha gzardin shiachrisu yamecha. Right? It's already been established in the heavens that your days are numbered, that your days are going to end. Nifhalti mehemer. Right? Go quickly. Right? Change quickly. So the mus aviz al nelam yan. His father disappeared. So that Shabbos, he says, that Shabbos, all right, I was a little freaked out. So I didn't smoke, right? I didn't turn on the radio. But then Motzi Shabbos, halachti l'kolno. I went to the theater. Okay, But when I came home again, his father knocks at the, his father shows up again, right? And says, hello, right? The Motzi Shalavi come over, hey, kis ato batalas v'ketil, v'hu mischanin umavakish l'fane she'eti v'esmasai, and he begs me that I change my actions. V'armeli shezui asarachroni. He told me that this is my last warning, right? So this is, you know, 5-6 times. He's already he's coming to him. So he says that time. He says I worked as a locksmith, in an office. You work in Israel. You work on Sunday. So he came in on Sunday morning. I made sure everybody knew what they were supposed to do. And afterwards, I had heard once upon a time about this person named the Chazon Ish. So I went to go visit the Chazon Ish. This is Kasher Achavarti es Miftan Besos. And when I crossed to the threshold to his house, the Chazon Ish began right away to speak to me. Bechumra, right? Harshness. Oy vavoy, ata ovid v'Shabbos. You work. He just walked in the door, right? Oy vavoy, you work on Shabbos. Ata ovid roshana v'gamikur. You worked on your roshana yom kippur. Lavicha imenucha bi'olam ha'elyo nigzar alecha karis. He says to your father has not gotten any rest in the heavens, and therefore they've established that you're going to get karis, that you're going to be cut off. So, and right away, the Chazon Ish finished his words. He sat down on his couch. He put his hands between his heads. He put his head between his hands, and he said, "I'm standing there, right in front of him." And the Chazon Ish is like crying, and the fellow's like, "What?
You're going to be cut off."
Well, so there's a concept called kares, which means you're going to die and you're going to be cut off from the Jewish people. Is really what it means, okay. Right? But the Chazon Ish like puts his hand between his head between his hands and starts crying, and this guy's like, what happened here, right? So v'sof achrei kama ragayim shel tzipia. He says after moments of expectation, like it literally means, I'm not sure how to translate it. The Chazon Ish also opened his eyes and said to me, b'schus mitzvah gedula shekiyamta ben recha. There must be some great mitzvah that you did when you were a kid. Yosifu lecha mimar yamim shan, that you've been added these days and years. V'yachshav tachzul lemutav v'teilch v'derach ha'yishor kvisha niyach osa avich. He says now it's time for you to go back to the way you were taught. In tiskrit, you remember. Ezo mitzvah kiyamta binurecha, right? That do you remember what mitzvah it is when you were a kid? He says, well, I don't know, or that you've kept since you were a kid. He says, well, I don't know. I've been mechal Shabbos, but I never hit anyone, and I've given stucco all the time. Mm-hmm. So the Chazon Ish says, no, ain't daivka. That's not enough, right? There must be something else that you did that's giving you a really great schus. So he says, He says, I remember when I was 14 years old. A woman came to me, came to the father, and told us that her child had died in the town, and there's nobody to deal with the burial. So my father sent me to go and bury this child. And even though it was very dangerous, because the Nazis were already on the road, and who knows if I would have been caught, still, anyways, I went ahead, and I was scared to death. Still, I went ahead, and I did that mitzvah. So the Chazon Ish responded by saying, he says, that must be it. And that was it. Right? He nodded with his head, and he didn't say anything else. He says, When I left the house, I accepted upon myself to keep Torah and mitzvahs like a full Jew. And from that time, I've been able to see success in the things that I've done. So he comments here at the end here in the Sefer from the Kehilas Yaakov. The Kehilas Yaakov is Yaakov Kanievsky, Yaakov Chaim Kanievsky's father, right, the stipler, who was the Chazon Ish's brother-in-law, right? He married the Chazon Ish's sister. So he commented, and he lived for a few decades afterwards. I think he died in the 80s. He says, Zehu Sipur Shal Chazon Ish, Apelu Apela, right? Sipur Nor Shalu Nishpako, it's an amazing story. And then he added on and says, Ki Aduish and Neshamas Bo Lamar Chazon Ish. He says, it's known that souls would come to the Chazon Ish. V'aviv Shal Yehudi Hazeh, and it must be that this Jew's father came to the Chazon Ish from the Olam Emes and told him, that his son lo al bino uvikish men l'takin es bino. He asked him to help out. Zehu hapshat shel sipur. That's the explanation of the story. So he brought this in the context of Am Kshei Yorav. Sometimes it is very difficult to change. So perhaps the message that we have is but we maybe should not go to such extreme and dire circumstances in order to be able to change. Maybe be able to find the things in our own lives that we should try to change and try to improve. And everything should be good. All right. Have a good day.